Hello and welcome back to Project Pod with me, Marietta Sandylands. Today in pod number 18, I had the pleasure of talking with Emma Gunnar-Wardner, who is the host of the Emma Guns podcast, which recently reached 6 million downloads. She is also a former beauty editor and now a writer and brand consultant alongside her podcasting work. And it really was a joy speaking with her today. She was so open and warm, and I had the chance to ask her so many things that I wanted to about podcasting and generally her experience. So we talked about things like why Emma started the podcast almost 3 years ago, at a time that was quite tough, really, when things felt like they were not going the way that she wanted them to. And we talked about her desire to really share the stories of the inspiring and fun people that she worked with, lots of brand consultants, people who, as Emma said, people who really stood for what they produced. So we talked about loads of things like to do with podcasting, things like what's been the most challenging for Emma in developing the podcast. We talked about the importance of getting a project out there instead of getting lost trying to perfect it. And we talked about lots of memorable interviews that she's had with people like Gretchen Rubin, Jen Sincero, Michelle Visage, also people like Caroline Hirons and Nadine Baggett. So, and all of the interviews are memorable for different reasons and mean something different to her and have resonated with people for different reasons. So we talk about the huge amount of work as well that goes into creating a successful podcast and what it entails, and really the importance, if you want to make a creative project successful, the importance of keeping going and being consistent in order to find your purpose within the project. So I hope you enjoy the conversation podcast as much as I did speaking with Emma. As I said, it really felt such a joy speaking with her. And let me know what you think.
So I'm here today, very excited to be with Emma Gunnar-Wardner. I hope I said that right. From the
You did!
From the Emma Gunn Show. Very, very excited to speak to you because I discovered your podcast a while ago and have followed it and love it. Look forward to the episodes being released so much, and just seeing how you've developed the show and how successful it is now as well. I saw you'd had, I think, 5 million downloads or something incredible.
So something like that, yeah.
It's wonderful. So I wondered if you could just talk a bit about why you started. I know you mentioned a little bit about this in the episode with your brother recently, but why you started the podcast and what was the impetus behind it?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm really delighted to be on the show because I know that you've been following the Emma Gunn Show for a long while. I recognise your name, so when your request came in to do this, I was delighted. So thank you, and for a lovely introduction. The reason I started the podcast was out of frustration, out of I wasn't in a particularly happy place in my life, and career-wise, that was very true. I have was a journalist. I was health and beauty. No, I wasn't. I was fashion and beauty editor on a magazine for nearly 10 years. And magazines are kind of juggernauts, and they move very quickly, and you're always doing this thing and that thing. And I went freelance, and it really hit me quite hard how difficult it is to get that momentum going. And I tried my hand at lots of different things. I knew I didn't want to just be a straight up magazine journalist again. I knew I didn't want to go into a full-time role if I could help it. And I was doing consultancy and various other bits and bobs. And the truth was is that the magazine I left, I'd never felt like my output that I had been writing or putting together for them, it had never felt 100% me. And I was really looking for somewhere where I could write things that felt authentic. It's probably the best way I can think of describing it. And I just wasn't finding it. And then if I did write an article, particularly if it was one from a personal perspective, there'd be, you know, oh, can we change this? Or can we add in this? Or are you sure it didn't make you feel like this? And it just felt too edited. And so really the podcast came out of that frustration, coupled with the fact that I was feeling very unhappy at the time. I didn't know I was depressed at the time. And so I would cling to podcasts by people like Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan. And I found interviews with people like the wrestler Triple H and Arnold Schwarzenegger unbelievably motivating, because they were tapping into a very positive mindset. You're talking about like the best of the best and how they achieve. And so the two sort of balanced out. And I realized that actually some of the greatest people I've ever interviewed, like brand owners and the people within the beauty and fashion industry, only ever really get captions in interviews or articles. And yet they are my mates in many instances, and they are really special, incredible, inspiring people who are incredibly hardworking. And it was just one of those things where I thought, these conversations need to be somewhere. And the podcast kind of came out of all of that sort of nonsense and noise and stuff going on.
Yeah. And it's, you said it's been about 3 years now. So
it'll be 3 years in April, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a long old time. And you got in there before the, it feels like we were just saying how that podcasts have really started to get really big last year. Everyone you see has one, and it was still not a super popular thing then. You decided on that format rather than carrying on writing.
Well, I'd done YouTube, and I knew I didn't want to do that again. And again, the writing side of it, one of the things that I had done with freelancing is I had got to kind of manage projects myself. And so I'd had the benefit of knowing what it felt like to have control of a project and its output. So every time I then had to sort of collaborate on my own content, it felt a bit iffy. Honestly, it was just that thing of, I was listening to all these podcasts and I thought, I love this. I absolutely love this. I wrote a piece for Get the Gloss about podcasts, and it was like the easiest thing I've ever written in my life. It was like, these are why they're so good. It's passive learning. It's also private discovery. You don't have to worry about your browser history if you want to look up an episode on something that you would potentially find embarrassing. I don't know. It was just all of those things. And I was just listening to all these great people, and I thought, I really want to do it. I didn't give it much more thought than that. I remember saying, I'm going to start a podcast, and just Googling, how do I start a podcast, literally, and just figured it all out, got it all wrong. Like, you know, I taught myself how to edit audio files, taught myself how to publish to, and like code, like all the stuff that you have to do to publish onto Apple Podcasts and stuff like that. And that's what makes it feel really nice now, is because like I kind of had to figure it all out from scratch, which is really nice. But it's also lovely because all my friends who are starting podcasts, they come to me and I'm like, I've got you. Here's everything that you need to know, step by step. This is how you publish it here. This is how you do that. This is the equipment I would buy. So it's actually a really lovely thing to have discovered and now be able to share.
Yeah. How long would you say that learning process was? Because you said, were there any kind of, I don't know, any mistakes that you made in the beginning? Or was it more just sort of, it was a process that started slowly and sped up? Or...
I like to think I'm quite tech savvy, like I'm quite quick. So the thing that I found the most challenging was the sort of back end stuff. Mm-hmm. So before I published my podcast, and my website is powered by Squarespace using the offer code Roo from the RuPaul podcast.
Okay.
And there was a little bit of tinkering around, is the best way I can describe it, of having to like paste RSS feeds and various bits of code in order to get Squarespace and Apple Podcasts to talk to each other. And that I screwed up a few times. And then I remember somebody saying, is your something or other turned on? And I was like, hmm? And I hadn't copied a correct bit of code or something, but nothing that actually impacted the output, so nothing that impacted the quality of the audio or the fact that it actually got published. So I wasn't too fussed about that stuff, because I always think there's a lot of pressure to start things perfectly, and don't start it unless it's going to be absolutely right and absolutely perfect. But actually the best things I've ever done are the things that I've started and they look as basic as they are, and you're just kind of figuring it out. It's like now I'm adding YouTube to the podcast, and it looks really basic, because it is, because I'm not going to invest in three cameras in a studio when I'm kind of finding my feet and seeing whether people like it. So let's just let's just be real. And then as the show grows, if it takes off, then we'll add and it'll get a bit swankier. But I quite like, and I think it's quite nice when I see people progress from my standpoint as a consumer or a consumer of these podcasts or video, whatever it might be. I like seeing people develop and grow and seeing things evolve. So I kind of just think, well, come and join me on this journey.
But I think that's such a nice thing, and maybe why people get frustrated with the perfection of things like Instagram, because it's not real life. That I remember hearing you saying something about how you don't do really heavy duty editing of the kind of cutting out all of the ums or whatever from your the podcast. It's but there's something about that people then can really relate to, and it's kind of saying, well, where is the value is in the conversations that you're having. And the fact that they're relevant and they're interesting and fun. And yeah, I think it was a Seth Godin quote that I heard say something like, start before you're ready.
Yeah.
Which I think is it's so important when doing this kind of stuff, because then it stops you from getting caught up in too much kind of fantasizing about what the end product's going to look like, but just going, well, let's see if this resonates with people and how it is. And
there's always going to be a reason not to do something. And sometimes you just have to go, yeah, I think I know what they all are. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple as that.
Exactly. And so some of the conversations you mentioned you were having with people, were there any kind of particular conversations that inspired you with particular friends or contacts of yours? You were saying brand owners or people that you worked with that you thought, I really want to get this person out there? Or what were those experiences that kept coming up?
It was just that, it was more the fact that I would spend an afternoon with a brand owner in their lab, and yet their actual contribution to a feature might be a couple of sentences in a picture caption or less than a paragraph throughout a 1500 word piece. And it doesn't mean that the journalism was poor. It just means that there were other things that were being focused on. And sometimes, like, the backstories of these brand owners, there is no blueprint for success in the beauty industry. There is no, especially now where a lot of these brand owners are creating really new, exciting things. It's a bit more tentative out there. And I just think it takes more guts. And you can't hide behind anything. Like, you've got to stand for what you're producing. And like I said, they're some of the most creative, inspiring people that I get to spend my time with, and who follow a dream. No one that I've interviewed has ever kind of just fallen into a family business or anything. Like James Reid, for example, was the pioneer in many ways of this kind of luxury tan with his tanning collection. He grew up a few towns over from me. He's a boy from the Medway towns. That was not obvious, and he trod a really impressive new path. Like, he really broke new ground, and that's why I was really keen when I started up. He's a dear friend as well, but I really wanted to get him on tape because I am so inspired by what he did.
Yeah. And it made me think when you said about being behind what you stand for. That's kind of what you have to do as well with the podcast. Because when you have an interview with people, and you've said when you've shared things about nutrition, you get quite a lot of heated debate about it. But
yeah, nutrition's a very, very interesting conversation. I definitely I don't come from the macrobiotic. I don't come from that kind of school of eat clean, this is toxic, any of that. I'm very much in the, whether it's right or wrong, I very much kind of just think our parents' generation ate very simply, and they ate breakfast, lunch and dinner. And it was before all of these fads for post-workout drinks and snacks and whatever. So I just kind of keep it simple. But it is the topic that people seem to be very emotionally charged about. And it was actually for 26 Habits, I did something on the ketogenic diet, because it's something that keeps getting talked about this idea of if you follow the ketogenic diet, you actually switch your body from burning carbohydrates to burning fat, which means that you are a more efficient machine, shall we say. And it's a really interesting concept and it's been in the press a lot. So I thought, well, let's try it out for 26 Habits. I was not advocating the ketogenic diet. I was not saying that it was a good thing to do. I was saying, this is something that people are talking about. Let's see how easy it is to actually implement it. I tried and failed twice, okay? So it wasn't that easy. But what I found really annoying was somebody coming at me on Twitter and saying, well, you're not qualified, you're irresponsible, and hadn't consumed the content to actually be able to be insulting. So nutrition, look, I know what I stand for, but I do consider myself to be an interviewer. And just because I stand for calories in, calories out, which fundamentally is where I sit, it obviously you've got to have balance and macros are important, but if somebody wants to come on and talk to me about macrobiotic diet and why it's changed their life, I will give them a platform because somebody else might find that content interesting. Somebody else might find that actually by doing that, their life is better for it. It is not for me to say how the content is interpreted. I will absolutely give that person a platform, but it has just been the case with nutrition that it has just been quite emotionally charged.
Yeah.
Which was a surprise.
Yeah. Mm. And the other, so you were saying in terms of other people who you have on the podcast, how do you choose who to have on? So you're obviously having people who've got really interesting, inspiring stories, brand owners as kind of one group of people, but who else do you choose to have on and how has that changed kind of from when you started the podcast?
So when I started, it was very much tapping up my beauty contacts. And my role on my magazine job had been very much beauty and fashion and celebrity. So, it was tapping up mates and people who looked after people who were like, hey, we'll give you some time with them. And it was great. And then it's grown. And as much as my heart will always be in beauty, because that's where my world was for such a long time, I have expanded into talking to authors. I've had some of the drag queens on from RuPaul's Drag Race. I do believe that everybody has a story and everybody is interesting. And I don't really have an agenda as such. I just want to get people on and give them the space to be able to tell their story or to have a fun conversation, whatever it might be. And for the people listening to leave that experience feeling better for it. Sounds quite idealistic and simple, but it's true. Like I had Caroline Hirons, Nadine Baggett and Trini Woodall on my show recently. And we're all friends. And I decided to see what would happen. And sure enough, it was like herding kittens. And at the end of it, I thought, oh no, people are going to hate that. They're just going to think it was so, so disorganized. And Trini stops halfway through and orders lunch. And
so like, that was it a genius moment in it. That was just like, you could hear her ordering food. It was great because it was the combination of those people together and what they had, the sort of energy together and the similarities but differences between them. So,
yeah, and I think you could hear my frustration until she says, are you sure you don't want anything? I'm like, fine, I don't want latte. Goodness sake, let's get back to it. But I came away from that really worrying. I thought, oh gosh, I really hope that there was some nutritional value in that. And actually, I got a heck of a lot of feedback on that show about people talking about female friendship, women supporting women. There's been a lot of talk about the WhatsApp group that we have. And it's literally the last thing that was exchanged in that WhatsApp group was about what air fresheners Trini uses in her Trini taxi because it smells really nice in there. So that was a really nice thing. And it was really nice for me as well because these are women I would call up and say, I call my friends. So it was really nice to as well as people's reaction to it and as well as the fact that I think we did talk about some important things within the show, it was nice for me personally to think, oh my gosh, I've got these amazing women, these are my mates, that's fantastic, you know. I know that sounds, but there were lots of things to appreciate from that show and it was unexpected, whereas I had Gretchen Rubin on the podcast a couple of years ago and she was delightful and inspiring and just so warm and open. And I felt really moved by that conversation. And when I had Jen Sincero on the podcast, Jen Sincero's books, I am not lying to you when I say that when I was feeling very depressed and I was being very negative constantly in my own head, her books changed the vocabulary that I used. And so it was really powerful. And Mally Ronkel, I had her on just before Christmas. And like, well, there was a real tender, like almost like at the end crying, because we were both feeling a bit wobbly that day for whatever reason. She had just got off a long haul flight. I'd been really, really busy, been out the night before, was way too tired and was a bit just not feeling my best self. And it was just lovely. So, and again, hopefully the content of those shows goes and lives on elsewhere and people get something out of them.
Yeah, well, I think definitely, and how the fact that you've seen it grown and develop, and are the, in terms of things that you have learned along the way, what would you say are the main lessons really that you've learned and the things that keep you doing it?
One of the things that I learned quite early on, I was very nervous about being open and honest about my own mental health issues. And even saying that out loud, I think, oh, crikey. I was nervous about talking about the fact I'd been depressed, and I was depressed when I started this podcast. I was also suffering with anxiety at the time, telling you before you recorded. There are actually two podcast recordings I went to where I had a panic attack in front of the guests before you recorded and had to be talked off the ledge. I was very nervous about all of that, but this show has taught me that I'm not unique, because whenever I have spoken about mental health or about my own experiences, I get people saying, you said in words what I've been feeling, and it was the reason that I went to go and see my GP today, or it's the reason why I went to go and I looked up a counsellor today, or it's the reason why I went for a run today, or any of those things. And that's a huge thing. It's like, I can't be precious about my own experiences, because I'm not unique. Someone else will be feeling the same way, and putting mine out there from the feedback I've been getting is helpful. So that's one thing I would say for sure. And then I've taken away a lot from each guest, and actually I didn't record that much in December, and it wasn't intentional. I went away on holiday. I spent time with fellow podcaster Lindsay Kelk in LA. We went on a road trip to Palm Springs. And I was very nervous about, oh, you haven't recorded, you haven't recorded, you haven't recorded. But actually, I do a show a week, sometimes two a week. And sometimes that can be four recordings a week, or, you know, depending on how the schedule maps up. And sometimes it's easy to forget, or it's easy to just get on that juggernaut and maybe not take in what's been happening. So to be able to actually have a bit of a break and really think back on some of the most recent episodes, like the one I was saying to you about Caroline Trini and the Dean, and actually really appreciate it on a different level, has been really lovely.
Yeah, I was wondering as well how you, in terms of the guests that you said you started off with lots of people who were kind of friends and contacts, mm-hmm. How have you gone about getting on different guests that are, I know you've talked about wanting to interview The Rock and Oprah and people like that, but how have you gone about getting on guests that you didn't have that kind of contact with to begin with?
Hustling, and literally that's all I can say is hustling. And I also have a friend who has access to a directory who every now and again will slip me an email. Just hustle, just sometimes direct messaging on Instagram, which doesn't work very well, because if they're not following you, it's hard. Going through people's websites. And also there's a brilliant podcaster called James Altucher, and he sends out a newsletter, and he put in his newsletter the other day, and it's so accurate, something that for every 100 emails you send out, you get 20 responses, and then from those you get three, and then from those you might get one. So you get 20 where you have a conversation, three that maybe they come to pass, and you never know. So I want to make sure that I have really good quality guests on the show, but I also want to make sure that I maintain my schedule of being weekly. So I am just constantly emailing and looking for people and keeping an eye on what books are coming out. And, you know, I literally, if ever I see on Instagram, if a celebrity puts that they're on their way to London, I'm like, right. And I get onto their people as quickly as I can. But I would love to get The Rock on. I'd love to get Arnold Schwarzenegger on. He's one of my dream guests, because those guys, in terms of what they've achieved professionally, are so unbelievably inspiring. Yeah. And I think I would have a different kind of conversation with them than they're currently having.
Yeah.
Because I'm coming from a completely different perspective than I've ever heard them do. So, and obviously I'd love to get Oprah on, but you know.
Well, let's see. Let's see.
It's what I actually sent Oprah's people an email, and I said, look, I know I'm going to have to get a lot of no's before I get a yes. So can I have my first no, please? And they saw the joke. They found it funny. They said, no, not right now. And obviously, if you follow the podcast, you follow Caroline Hirons, you know, she's a massive Oprah Winfrey fan. And I messaged her immediately. I was like, Caroline, I got my first no from Oprah. Let's go and have tea.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I think it's so good to share these things so people don't kind of, people can see that the work that you do to get the guests on, it's not just sort of that things magically happen. And the amount of work, we were talking about that actually, the amount of work involved in having your own podcast. How much work is it for people who don't know, who might be thinking about wanting to start their own podcast? How much time are you spending on it?
Oh, gosh. That's a really good question. In the early days, like aside from all the learning that I did, and I remember there was one day when I sat at my desk and I was learning how to do all the back end stuff, and I think it was 15 hours uninterrupted. If you're just talking about the basics of getting like the audio publishing, doing the emailing, doing the researching, oh gosh. No, it is a full-time job. but I don't know about you, well, obviously you're not, but I wasn't able to do it as a full-time job. It was my side hustle, mm-hmm. but it was a full-time job's worth of commitment because I was doing this weekly show. So it was taking up, I would say, 2 to 3 days a week.
Yeah.
To kind of do all the admin. And then if you go and do an interview with someone, so I live on the very edges of London. So if I want to go in and do an hour's recording with somebody, I'm looking at half a day. So even a recording day, to make that really productive, you have to come back and publish and edit immediately. Otherwise, it's half a day wasted, or you know what I mean? So it is a lot of work, but it depends. I would say now, because of all of the things that are involved in it, I would say it probably is... Well, I'm working on it every single day, but I'm trying to think of an answer that will be of use to people listening. That's because I do it weekly, and it's also because my current plan at the moment is to have another midweek show.
Okay.
But that's taking a lot more organising, because my midweek shows previously have been just me. They've been solo episodes, but I want the new midweek show to involve a guest. So that means basically doubling my workload. And that's what I'm working towards at the moment. So if you, I'm having a bit at the moment where I'm kind of publishing out of sync, and I'm publishing bonus episodes because I need to work up to it, because there's been a little gap in the system from Christmas. So right now it is a full-time job. But that's because I'm able to do that because of everything else that's in place that I'm doing work-wise. That's able to kind of fund that.
Yeah. So you, in terms of your other work, you've got you're still writing, and how many kind of different streams of things we got going on to give people an idea?
I still write. Mm-hmm. I do quite a bit of brand consultancy. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting, as I really, really enjoy that. What else am I doing? Those are really the main things at the moment, is writing, brand consultancy. I've done some TV work, done some radio work, but that's really the sort of crux of it. And then obviously the podcast.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of things like sponsorship for the podcast, because I know you've done some sponsored episodes, when did that kind of come into being as part of the podcast? And was that always your ambition with it from the beginning?
I knew I always wanted to monetize, because I knew that I couldn't go into a project without there being some kind of financial return. But I also knew that I would probably have to do a minimum of 2 years before it would come back. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not famous. I'm not an Instagram sensation with 100,000 followers. I'm, you know, just some girl who decided to start doing a podcast. So that means that you have to work that much harder. So two things happened for me in terms of the sponsorship. So I have long-term relationships with beauty brands, and once some brands realized that podcasts were a good vehicle for sharing their brand message, which, let's face it, is what advertising is, I started to have conversations. And so my way of working with brands is I will create an episode in the middle of the week, so it doesn't sit in that Sunday spot, which is the sweet spot where the like main interview is. And I will only work with a brand if I can editorialize it and I can cater it to the audience that I know I have and I know will engage with it. Because there's no point if I suddenly started doing sponsored podcasts on something completely inauthentic. It would just turn people off, and it wouldn't. What's the end result? A little bit of money in your pocket. Mm. It's not worth it. So I work with brands who I feel like there's value in collaborating, and then we create a show together that brings life to a story. So for example, if you look back through the feed, I worked with Johnson & Johnson last summer, and we created two standalone episodes, one about eczema, dry skin and very dry skin, which are problems that actually affect a lot of people and are quite difficult to can be quite difficult to manage. So we had a standalone episode about that with one of their experts, and then we did one on acne. And the feedback was that they were really helpful and that they were full of information. And what I try to create with those episodes is kind of a really nice ball of information where you get everything that you need. And yes, it's sponsored by a brand, but if I didn't think that those brands were a good resource, I wouldn't work with them. Because I have had the situation where I've said no. I want to make that very clear. I have said to people, no, it doesn't feel right. I don't want to work with that brand. I don't know how we could create that because I don't actually believe in the end product.
Yeah, I think that sounds like such an important thing of having, you know, if you are being sponsored, that you know that there's value in the product because of feedback you've had or knowing from other people or yourself. So, yeah. Was that about the 2 year mark that you started doing that?
It was probably about 18 months, just maybe like, yeah, somewhere between like 18 months and 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of, I think people started to realize that podcasting, because in the States, I would say America is a good few years ahead of the UK and Europe in terms of where they are with podcasts. And in the US, podcasts are the most trusted advertising sources. Because if Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss does an ad read, you think, I'm going to go and buy that. I've bought mushroom coffee because of Tim Ferriss. I mean,
and I also thought about that, buying that mushroom coffee. But yeah.
Actually, it's actually not that bad. It's actually decent. Yeah. I mean, I haven't restocked, but I didn't mind it, but I did buy it. And the same with Joe Rogan. Like, if something's on his podcast, if he talks about it personally, I really like it. But then equally, there are other podcasters I listen to and they start mentioning toothbrushes or something and I'm like, oh, fast forward. Yes, so America's ahead and it's a very trusted advertising resource. So I think a lot of people just realised actually there's something to be said for podcasts as an advertising platform. So that's really when it all kind of started to come into play. But it's very slow and sure. It's very slow and steady and we'll see what happens. But I remember in 2017, which was so a year after I started the podcast, there was an article saying 2017 will be the year of the podcast. And then last year, and then this year. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, is it something that you think about a lot in terms of how many, we talked about how many people you're seeing coming out with podcasts and how to keep being heard in that ever-increasing field? Or do you think that it's just a case that it's about people choosing by interest really and voices that resonate with them and guests that resonate with them? Or
I think there's room for everybody, and I like I said, a lot of my friends are starting podcasts and I'm really delighted to be able to say, do you know what, I'm going to give you what I didn't have, which is this is who to speak to here, this is the kit to buy, because that's a really nice thing to be able to share with people. And also there's room for everybody. And I remember Oprah Winfrey saying that when she obviously started her afternoon chat show, and it was the first of its kind. And then all the other networks started to realise that it was doing very well, and they all started their own afternoon chat show. And she said that one of her producers said to her, you know, you really need to watch these shows because they're coming for you. And she said, but if I spend my time looking at them, I'm not looking at what I'm doing. And so bring it on. The more the merrier. It doesn't mean anyone's going to be cannibalised. So I'm not saying that I don't look at what other people do, because I do, and I champion people. But if I worry too much about will more podcasts mean that I get fewer listens, then that's not a healthy way to live, is it? I should just think of it as motivating and think, right, I better make sure my content is A+. That's the only way I can look at it and think about it.
And I was thinking about when you said at the beginning how you were not, it was like tough times when you started the podcast. And I know you've mentioned before about this, having this feeling of thinking, oh my God, is, you know, should I just move back in with my parents, and things are all going, like, you know, going the wrong way. And I'm sure that's something lots of people have kind of felt at various points, and definitely I can relate to that as well. It's the idea of when you're trying to kind of get ahead, and then things are, how much longer things can take, I think. Partly why I started the podcast, it's people who are taking, you know, they've taken their own path, and that's, it takes time and patience and bravery to keep going with that. It sounds like you've got a lot personally from doing the podcast. What was that like, feeling your work was really kind of sustaining you?
In terms of financially or emotionally? Or
no,
both?
Emotionally, I guess. Well, emotionally I was thinking about, but financially obviously is part and parcel of it. But I'm just thinking about that change that you had, obviously, from being in a tough place.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I think I've questioned it recently when I've had this sort of few weeks where I haven't been recording as much, and thinking about, is my output different for it? Are my conversations different because I'm not coming from this very helpless position anymore? Whereas in the beginning, I really was still very much in that place of, you know, I don't even know whether I'd started therapy by the time I don't think I had by the time I started the podcast. I was still very much floundering, and, you know, staying in my flat was on a month by month basis and all that kind of stuff. I guess I need to think about it a bit more in my own life, but I think it's one of those things with the podcast. I've joked about it, but it's kind of not funny, is that I do feel like the podcast saved my life, because it gave me a purpose I didn't have. And it was the thing that, even when I felt low, I still put one foot in front of the other. Nothing stopped me. I made a bond with myself and with my listeners to publish every Sunday, and nothing stopped me doing it. And I can't really articulate it beyond that. It was just a kind of it was non-negotiable. And I didn't have a non-negotiable before that. And so it has been, for even from that sense of having something that has a sense of purpose, or I feel has a sense of purpose, feels incredible. But then when you put something out there, when you're feeling like that, and then somebody writes you a message and says, your podcast, the way that you talked about your own issues, has really helped me, that's unexpected and wonderful and brilliant, and again just makes your foot goes one in front of the other faster and faster and faster, because you just keep thinking, or the strides get longer and longer, because you just think, I have to keep doing this.
Yeah, I think that's such a lovely way of putting it, and the fact that it's all generated from you, and you putting in those the consistency, basically, and saying, you know, no one is saying to you, you've got to publish every week, but you were like, I'm going to do it, and then showing yourself you can do it, which is, you know, it's a huge amount of work to have to get something out every week. So yeah, I think it's pretty amazing feat, really, and great to have got so much positive feedback.
Yeah, it's lovely, really nice to hear from people and to speak to someone like you who's also engaged with the show and likes it.
Well, I mean, just too many good episodes to talk about, but any episodes that particularly stay with you, as I know you mentioned Gretchen Rubin and Jenny Sincero earlier, and then kind of episodes with Trini, Caroline and Nadine episode, but any kind of ones that you particularly look back on and think, I learnt this, or you just felt great, or
One of the shows that was really important for me, or I don't know if that's the right word, but one of the shows that had a massive impact on me was Michelle Visage. And the reason it had a massive impact on me is because I am a massive consumer of RuPaul's Drag Race. I love the TV show. I love everything that it stands for. And what the show with Michelle did, when I was talking about, you said, how do you get guests on like The Rock? And I said, oh, it's just hustle. I had no lines of communication with anyone at Drag Race or with Michelle Visage. I just hustled and hustled and hustled. And I used to fantasize about what would happen if I podcasted with Michelle Visage. Like, that would be insane. Like, that would be incredible. Because this thing that lives on my television would be in my eyelid. Like, I'd be in it. I'd take it from the television, it'd be in my life. And I just thought, and I remember fantasizing about it and getting really tearful and just feeling really like, oh my God, that would just be so amazing. And that would be the best thing ever. And then it happened and I walked outside and I had at the time my kit was a lot bigger and I had a little pull along suitcase and it was a bank holiday Monday and it was blisteringly hot. And I was walking to the tube and I was like, you know that scene in The Holiday where Cameron Diaz tries to cry? Yeah. I was like, I'm supposed to cry now because this is really profound and amazing. And I was walking up the street, like really trying to like, come on, Emma, let it all out. And I realized, and then I sort of was like, no, this is your life now. You interview people like Michelle Visage, use it. Who's next? So it was this really weird thing in that it was an epiphany moment and it was really lovely and brilliant. And she was very gracious and giving. And we had a great chat like on tape. And then we also had a lovely chat afterwards. And that was a very profound day for me personally, because it was like, you worked really, really hard for that and you made it happen. And nobody handed it to you. It was all from hard work. And then subsequently, I've interviewed Bianca Del Rio from RuPaul's Drag Race, who was incredible and who I loved, and Courtney Act, who was also incredible. And it's just, not that it's all about Drag Race, but it's just kind of this thing that was so far away, bringing it a little bit closer through the show. For yeah. me and for my audience is amazing. Just felt really great.
And you say that was through hustle. Was that kind of messaging people or phone calls, or what kind of time period are we talking about in terms of getting these people on?
I think Michelle was about a year. And that's the thing. I would say sometimes I think I set the bar really high for myself. And sometimes with those things, you have to give it time. Like I said, I'm a journalist. So I have some connections. Or I'm not a journalist, but I'm a writer. But I have some connections, but I'm not connected. So, and if somebody suddenly said to me, oh, I know Arnold, I would almost feel like, no, I want to do some more hustling first. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. And like I said, for the Oprah thing, I emailed them and said, I need a no, because I'm not going to get a yes first. So give me my first no. And obviously you've got to get your no's in a sequence and in a fashion that doesn't make you annoying. And that's sometimes, yeah. I think, the thing I struggle with.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, give it to me now. But persistence, you've just got to keep on and you've just got to say. And every time, if there's like 3 months between an email for like a big star, I'll say, since I last emailed you, my downloads have doubled, or I've gone up the charts, I'm number one here, or I make sure that they know that there's something new to say.
Yep.
But yeah, you just got to keep on. And then one day that no might turn into a maybe, and then that maybe might turn into a yes.
Yeah.
But you have to hustle, because if you're not a celebrity, if you don't already have like a huge following, you have to be prepared to roll up your sleeves and work like a beast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in terms of it, it feels like it that things have grown a lot for your podcast in this last year. But when did you start seeing, I mean, I was going to say results, whatever that means for you, but in terms of seeing large amounts of downloads, and was there like a moment that it all... things sort of set months where it suddenly just took off, or just slowly?
It's been slow and steady, which I think is my preference anyway. because I don't know, if I'd suddenly hit number one or like been the highest top downloaded podcast on day one, you think, well, now what? Whereas doing it slowly and steadily, you understand what works and what doesn't, and you can cater your content. So it's a really lovely position to be in. But I think at the beginning of 2017, I started 26 Habits. And it was the first time I was publishing. I was also publishing two shows a week. And 26 Habits was this idea of making or breaking a habit for every fortnight throughout 2018. And it really, really took off. And I ended 2018 almost thinking, thank goodness that's over, because it was something I had to think about and, you know, publish and do and this, you know, trying to be in the ketogenic diet in ketosis. It was just, you know, so all of these things. And I loved them. I loved the majority of them. I absolutely loved. And some of them for me, like the wardrobe clear out and then like living a much more edited life was life-changing, like really changed my quality of life. It was amazing. But lots of people contacted me between Christmas and New Year saying, but you are going to be doing some habits in 2019, aren't you? Because I'm not ready for this to be over. So I guess having a couple of strands, and I didn't consciously think about it, if I'm honest. I just thought, I think I can, I've got enough time now to, I've got the resources now to put in some more into the show. What could it be? And it just was almost a fluke. I guess I have my career as a journalist, so I have new sense. I know how to pull things together. So maybe it was just kind of knowing an interview show on a Sunday and the 26 Habits on a Monday. Let's see what happens. And it's been, the reaction and the response has been amazing. And like in the Facebook group, everybody's supporting each other doing their habits. It's just brilliant. So I think that was a real turning point. But then I'm thinking about what somebody listening to that might interpret, and they might think, well, I have to do double the work. And I don't want that to be the takeaway. I think being consistent is hugely important. So if you commit to saying I'm publishing on a Sunday, you publish on a Sunday. And like I said, at the moment, I'm in an in-between thing. So I'm over-publishing in order to kind of make up for it. But consistency is key. And yeah, just, I really do think that's the trick. If you're going to do it, if you say you're going to do it weekly. And if you can't do it weekly, do it fortnightly, you know, whatever it might be. But just be consistent.
How important has the Facebook group as well been in the whole evolution of the podcast and choosing content? What was the reason for starting the group? What's its role really in the podcast?
I think the reason for starting the group was because I have a feeling it was because Full Coverage started a podcast group. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Lindsay, and I think I probably just said, oh, I'm going to copy you. Is that okay? But truthfully, I was seeing all these conversations happening in their group. Obviously, Tim Ferriss has got one. I'm a member of his podcast group. I'm a member of Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop Facebook group. So I see these conversations happening. So I just thought, oh, maybe I should do one. And lo and behold, it's now got like well over 2,000 people in the group, and it's a really lovely place. And I am delighted when I go in there and I see the conversations that are happening and the support that people are getting. And people are like putting in some really personal stuff and asking for some life advice, and the stuff they get back is incredible. So in terms of how it informs the content, I will run things by the group and say, I'm thinking about this, what do you think? Mm-hmm. And if it gets a flat silence, then I don't do it. But if it then generates a conversation, then I do it. So it's usually, it's just a case of I'm usually just sort of testing the water. If I think, oh, this is a little bit far out. Like when I started YouTube, I was like, hey guys, what do you think of this? Do you want it visually as well? And they're all diehard podcast fans, actually, pretty much. So the majority were like, no, we're happy with the podcast. So I thought, well, I'm still going to stick at the YouTube thing and just see what happens. So it's nice to have, you're a podcaster, you podcast by yourself. It's nice to have people to bounce ideas off. And so that's what the group is, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think and like you say, that kind of, you just thought, I'll just try this and see what happens, similar to the YouTube thing, which is a really, it's a nice way of just exploring all of these things and parts of the podcast.
Yeah, I had a newsletter and I let that fall by the wayside, partly because of GDPR. But now I'm thinking, oh, I should really get a newsletter going again. But again, newsletters are much harder to put together than you might think. So when you see someone who's got a really slick, beautiful looking newsletter, give the time to read it, because actually they're really hard to create.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I was wondering, in terms of like the most popular episodes, what have those been?
Oh gosh, well, you probably know this as well. The analytics for podcasts are quite vague. I don't have a log of stats from day one, but I know that some of my most popular are Caroline Hirons, Nadine Baggett,
yeah.
Lily Pebbles was huge, Gretchen was really big, Jen was really big, Michelle Visage was really big, Lisa Snowden, there was a real spike, Claudia Winkleman, there was a real spike in numbers for her.
Yeah.
So they all have really big followings, so that's really nice. So it's quite nice to sort of occasionally throw in people who maybe aren't as well known, which I quite like doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I try not to go after people thinking that's going to be a big download episode. I really do think, what's the content going to be? What are we going to create from that? Like, what's going to be the nutritional value in that information that we gather from that podcast? And if that then leads to lots of downloads, then that's great. But I have also had podcasts that I have found really valuable that then, perhaps because the person isn't particularly well known, they don't get lots of listens.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really happy with the quality of the show.
Yeah.
So overall, I'm really pleased.
Yeah.
I try not to think too much about the numbers side of it.
Yeah, and I think I discovered people like Nadine Baggett and Caroline Hirons. I didn't know who they were before your podcast. And there's just something so...
You hear that, ladies?
but there's something amazingly entertaining, and just when you have both of them on or individually, there's just something brilliant about those episodes. What is it, do you think, that resonates so much with people about Caroline and Nadine?
Oh, well, I think the thing that I love about them, and I think the thing that I know their followers love about them, is they are nothing if not honest.
Yeah.
And I have a default setting. It's always like I'm a little bit drunk and I'm saying more than I should. That's my default setting, is I just have like a truth serum is in my blood. And Nadine's the same and Caroline is the same. If our mouths don't say it, our faces do. And so we're just all very, very honest. And we're terrible at lying and BSing. So I think when we have a conversation, whether it's on their channels on their own or whether it's on the podcast when they come on and do the show with me, well, whatever their output is, I think you know you're getting 100% the real deal. And that's what I try to achieve with every podcast, is let's just be really honest here. And if you're uncomfortable with anything, we'll take it out. But that never happens. And it's just that thing of, yeah, you know when you're being sold to, and that's not what I'm trying to create. I really just want I always say to people, I want it to be a safe space for you, because it's you, me, a guest, and we're all in each other's ears. So let's just keep it very real and let's not BS ourselves. And I, interestingly, listeners are really tuned in. If there's a guest where I come away, and I won't say obviously because I wouldn't do that, but if I come away and I think, oh, I wasn't so sure about that, even though it sounded fine and everything, I'll keep it to myself. And then someone will pop something up in the Facebook group and say, did anyone else think that blah, blah, blah? And they're so tuned in, so they can tell. But yeah. I always try to bring 100% like honesty, and just, I have no bad intention. I never want to stitch anyone up with a podcast. I really want them to come away from it feeling really happy, and for what they say to really resonate, and whoever is listening who needs it at that moment in time.
Yeah, I think that definitely comes across and why it's been so, so popular. And in terms of podcasting, I know you've done a couple of podcasts with your brother. How has that been, and why? How did you guys decide to do that?
Well, because I was going to do an Ask Me Anything, because there had been lots of questions coming into the Facebook group, and I realised there was just over an hour's worth of content, and I thought, that's me asking myself questions for an hour. I've done it before in like 2017 when I did my first Ask Me Anything. So I was fine with doing it again. It just so happened Gavin was coming over that week, and I thought, oh, I'll just get him to do it. He might as well. I'm driving him home. He can earn his keep. And then people liked him. And so I thought, well, let's do it again at Christmas. And he's very well read. He's very intelligent. Mm-hmm. He's the brighter one of the two of us by far. And I appreciate his input. So I am actually going to get him on the show a bit more in 2019, while still keeping him in his place. He's my older brother. So so he can't get too big for himself. He can't get too big for his boots. But he's very, very bright and intelligent and articulate and very thoughtful. Mm. So I think he offers a nice perspective, and yep, people seem to think he's all right.
I think it's a lovely balance as well. His like kind of reality check moments from him, actually, they're just delivered quite quietly and calmly. And there's something
it's so irritating when he's your brother.
But it's a very, really nice balance, I think. So it's great. Sounds good getting him on more.
Yes.
So I'm just thinking, conscious of all of, you know, the time, and thinking
we're good.
Okay, good. But in terms of, if you wanted to, through starting the podcast, I wanted to show other people that you can get out there, and you can, there is no secret to, you know, having your own, whether it's a side project or a business. It's things that you're saying that come up time and again, like consistency. But is there anything you'd say to someone who, maybe if they wanted to go and create a podcast now, or, you know, what would you advise to someone who's going, right, well, where do I start, or what should I do? Or thinking back to you when you started.
I think I would say to anybody who is starting anything, whether it was a podcast or anything, because I never realised this until quite recently, is that you do have control. So you do get to make your reality. And I always thought that, I don't know, that life happened to you. Like when I got into the workforce, I would only have left my job if I was fired or made redundant, because I would have never sort of realised that I could have made an alternative, I could have made a different reality for myself. I did apply for, that makes it sound like, well, obviously I did apply for other jobs, I don't mean that, but they never came off. But I never fully understood that sort of piece of the puzzle wasn't properly together, where it was like, if you want to do something, you can do it. And obviously within reason. But I had always thought I needed to be perfect first, or I needed to know somebody who knew somebody, or I needed to be connected, or it's like I said earlier, there's always a reason not to do something. But actually, I wish I'd realised earlier, but thank goodness I know it now, but I wish I'd realised earlier that I do have control over what I do. And had I left my job when I had wanted to and decided to go freelance, yes, I probably wouldn't have made much money, but I would have made it work, because I believe in myself, I believe in me. And I think as long as you do believe in yourself, and you think, well, I'm not going to let myself end up on the streets, I'm not going to let myself end up a failure, I'm going to make sure it's okay. I think if you can have that self-belief, which I definitely didn't have, and I still, it's not like once it's there, it's crystallized forever. You still have your ups and downs. But I would say to anybody, whatever you're doing, if you want to do it, if you're willing to put in the hard work, you have the control, you can make it happen. If you're listing off reasons why you can't do it, and those reasons are because I don't have the money, because I don't have the time, they're all things that you can change. True story, somebody asked me to write the book of 26 habits, and I was going back and forth about whether to do it. And there were many reasons why I decided not to, but one of the reasons, I was with Nadine Baggett, and I said, I just don't think I've got the time. And she went, listen, let's face it, if you stop watching Real Housewives, you'd bang that book out in a fortnight.
Yeah.
So, and she's absolutely right. So, you have the control. If you want to do something, don't canvas other people's opinion. Ask yourself, can I do this? Am I willing to put the time in? If the answer is yes, do it.
Thank you so much, Emma. It has been a total joy speaking with you today. I'm so grateful for your time.
And you've been such a great interviewer. Thank you so much. Yeah. I've loved all the questions. It's been lovely chatting.
Thank you so much for your time again. And I'll be very excited to see what happens with the podcast this year.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for your support. It really means a lot.
So there you have it, the episode. And I think for those of you thinking of starting a creative project or currently in the midst of one, it was so helpful hearing Emma's experience and her observation that there's always a reason not to do something. But if you're willing to put in the hard work, you can make a creative project happen. So you can find Emma's podcast, which is called The Emma Gunn Show, over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast platform you use. You can also find her Facebook group, which is The Emma Gunn Show, the forum, over on Facebook. And she's also, as she mentioned, on YouTube. So I hope you enjoyed the episode today. If you did, I would be really grateful if you left a review. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks.